Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
All right, we got a little technical glitch here. It'll be a little silence while I straighten it out. Give me a minute. Okay, let's see, and the problem still. All right. All right, I'm trying to get a clear board here. All right, okay, wait a minute, I gotta I got a maneuver. Hold on. All right, Kimmy K, I think you're there, but I got to get a clear board on my laptop, so now I'm going to my phone. Let me close out some of these pages here. That could be the problem. All right. All right, I'm on my phone. Mobile phone, well, smartphone. All right, I'm still... Okay. All right, now. Isn't this something? All right. Okay, now I'm getting a, now I can see the board, but, all right, hold on, Kimmy K. It's like I got to operate from two electronic devices when typically I only need one. All right. All right, it's making me go through all these gyrations. All right, now. Well, you got to jump through hoops. Today will sort of be like an open forum, which we've done twice this week, and that worked out well. But I put in the title, Nail Gun Needed, because that's what I need. I need a nail gun. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Let's see. Okay, we're slowly. Getting things in order here. But this. My computer, laptop, which I typically use for this podcast. It was freezing, so I couldn't see anything. Couldn't see the board, nothing like that. And then I went to my phone to see if that was running, not the phone, but the Blog Talk on my end. But for some reason, then the board, which I'm waiting on now, popped up normal, but now that's slowing down, so wait a minute. All right, here we go. Now, boy, 10 minutes, man, almost 15 minutes wrestling with that. Okay, hold on, Kimmy.
Out. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned. And the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house, and it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb: many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family gonna live in there? Is they gonna, I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
I won't apologize for the city. I've lived in the Near East Side for 26 years, and I refer to it as selective code enforcement. If you saw Linda's house, it didn't happen yesterday. If it had been any other neighborhood, no matter who was inside, city code would have been knocking at their doors. So we don't get the same services. Is it because it became a poor black community? The answer is probably yes. When I moved to the neighborhood in 1979, you could ride the rats down the alley at night when your car lights hit it. So we still don't have the same services. But there has not been adequate code enforcement. If something's broken on your house and it doesn't meet code and it costs $100 to fix, but you wait 20 years to tell them about it, it's probably going to cost $20,000 or $30,000 to fix. Linda's house was in absolute terrible shape on the inside. No human being should have been living inside that house. The system failed. We failed.
All right, that was a little audio clip from the documentary Flag Wars. And in our archives, we have at least two interviews, about maybe 3 hours worth of content, at least, with one of the people that was featured in that documentary, Flag Wars, which takes place in Columbus, Ohio. Now, I've been invited to Columbus. I haven't ventured there yet, but it's on my list because I like the whole state. Well, where I've been to in Ohio, I've liked, because it seems like practically anywhere you go in the state is overall what I consider an affordable housing state. But Columbus keeps popping up on my radar. So good morning, Kimmy K. If you're there. Okay, she might have stepped away herself. Oh, wait a minute. Let's see. Okay, my board might not be acting right. All right, hold on. Let me get to you guys.
Hi, my name's Doug Motes, and I live in Old Oaks, which is just immediately south of Old Town East. I've lived there for 5 years. Just history, my grandfather lived in Old Town East at 18th and Oak, and my great-uncle lived in Old Oaks at Mewberry, at a part of Mewberry where the freeway is now. So I feel very much like that's my heritage as well. I've lived in Columbus all of my life. I know my neighbors. I know Joyce, who lives right next door to me, and I participate in her African market. I know Mrs. Patterson across the way from me, too, who has a lot of issues that she has to contend with. Two doors up from Mrs. Patterson is Dr. Freddie Jordan, who is a professor here at Ohio State University at the Dental College, and she's a single African-American woman raising two wonderful daughters. I also know Mrs. Elsie Slyby, who lives just down the way as well. She's lived in my neighborhood since the 1960s. Her house is amazing, and I was there to comfort her when arsonists took out her garage just this past summer. Tuesday night, I was assaulted outside of my house by one of Mrs. Patterson's grandchildren. Someone from City Code had come to her house and was asking them about some improvements that they were doing to the home. There was a handicapped ramp. One of the residents of Ms. Patterson's home, Junior, needs that. And apparently there was some type of construction going on where they were putting up something else. I got out of my car, and the resident of the house just kept asking me, "Why'd you call city on me? Why'd you call the city on my grandmother?" I did no such thing. I go up and down that street, and I deliver the newsletters for our civic association. I've been involved with that. I let people know when the breast cancer screenings are at St. John's Community Center. I go and knock on doors to let people know when tax time is around and how they can find out about getting their taxes done. I go door to door and I tell my neighbors about predatory lenders and to not let them do that. I participate and I try to give back to the best of my ability to my community. I'm a gay man. I've had a loving partner for 5 years. I have every right to be in my community and in my home, as anyone else does. I do what I can to keep my house up. I'm not a trust fund baby. We both work very hard, and we both do our best to give back to our community and to be good neighbors and to be good citizens. What I've not heard or what I've not had happen to me is any of the folks in my neighborhood when I moved in came to me. I've gone out to everyone, and I know everyone, and I participate in their lives. And I think that that's what it takes, is just getting to know all the people and doing what you can to be a good person, a good neighbor, to be decent, and to live your life to the best of your ability.
I'm coming. I'm going to ask you a question, though, and I'm not asking you. I'm asking you as an individual, because you got to ask the question to an individual, because you can't ask it to a group, you know? And I'm not putting you down for it. I'm asking you the question. Why did your people leave the neighborhood? The reason I asked the question was because a lot of times we hear the issue about white flight, and it hasn't come up in this audience yet. In other words, there was a movement before the current movement. There was a change before this change. We haven't really brought that up, and I don't want to steer the conversation that way, but that was the factor, or a factor, that I remember moving into that neighborhood when I came in, because we were the second black family on the street. And when the little neighborhood boy went in the house and told my mother that he had to move because the niggas was moving in, right, we started looking for a realtor. No. It hit us that a change was going on. And that was a change before the change. And I just wanted to kind of interject that, which I probably had no business doing. You're next.
You moved back into the community that you had lived in before. When you came back in, it wasn't your community anymore. You were the intruder, just like the niggas that moved into your neighborhood. You were the intruder. So don't expect anybody to come and shake your hand, pat you on the back, and tell you how good it was of you to come in and move into our neighborhood and make it a better neighborhood for everybody. Because when we move out to your neighborhoods, we don't get that. What we get... Wait a minute. I'm not done. I'm not saying that this is right.
Right.
I'm saying that's the way it is. Now, what you have done in reaching out to your neighbors is a good thing. And maybe you've made friends in that neighborhood. Maybe your neighbors respect you. But don't think that you were welcomed into that neighborhood for coming in. Because when you come in, it signals change. I have seen the gentrification of neighborhoods. I don't live in Columbus. I was born here, but I don't live here. I live down south in southern Ohio. And I've seen the gentrification in neighborhoods in Cincinnati. And what happens typically in those neighborhoods is that whites come in. They buy houses for next to nothing. They get the loans that are available to them. They get the grants that are available to them, which were primarily put there for the people that live there to rehabilitate the houses that they were born in, that they were raised in, that they grew up in, but they don't know about. The gentrification comes, and within a period of time, it does not become a diverse neighborhood. It becomes a white, yuppie neighborhood.
All right, that was another little snippet from the documentary Flag Wars. And I've seen it. I've got a digital copy of it. I've seen that thing about at least 10 times. And we're going to – we've had one of the people on there that was in there. I call him Chief. He lives in Columbus. Kimmy K, can you hear me now? Okay, let me – I'm going to try another. All right, you know what? Well, here's what I'll do. Okay. I'm going to try another strategy here. 7682945. Okay. All right.
This is Blog Talk Radio. Please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
All right.
Unmuted.
All right, let's try.
All right, I had to hang up on myself. Let's see if this will work. All right, Kim and K, can you hear me now? Okay.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
All right, let me
start your show now. Press 1 to hear.
Since it appears you're calling back into a live show, we are reconnecting you now.
Okay. Now, Kimmy K, can you hear me now? Okay, I've called on 2 different phones. She can hear me, but wait a minute. Yeah, you know what? Kimmy, yeah, hang up and then call back in. Let's see if that works. All right, because she can hear me, and I've called in on 2 different phones. Okay. Okay. And anyway, but Flag War, you know what? Now Kimmy K, she's a health and wellness person. Which there was a person in the Flag Wars documentary who had health issues. But something that, all right, hold on, let's try this again. Okay. All right, Kimmy K, can you hear me now? Hello? Okay, we got a, all right, let me, I tell you what, let me, all right, let me try this.
I won't apologize for this city. I've lived in the Near East Side for 26 years, and I refer to it as selective code enforcement. If you saw Linda's house, it didn't happen yesterday. If it had been any other neighborhood, no matter who was inside, city code would have been knocking at their doors. So.
Okay.
We don't get the same services. Is it because it became a poor black community? The answer is probably yes. When I moved to the neighborhood in 1979, you could ride the rats down the alley at night when your car lights hit it. So we still don't have the same services. But there has not been adequate code enforcement. If something's broken on your house and it doesn't meet code and it costs $100 to fix, but you wait 20 years to tell them about it, it's probably going to cost $20,000 or $30,000 to fix. Linda's house was in absolute terrible shape on the inside. No human being should have been living inside that house. The system failed. We failed.
All right. What in the documentary Flag Wars, one of the primary themes of that documentary is gentrification. All right, and it takes place in the city of Columbus, Ohio. Let's see, Kimmy K, can you hear me now? I mean, you can hear me. But,
I'm here. Did you hear
me? Oh, okay. Now it works. Now it comes through. Let's see. All right. Wait a minute. I'm trying to get organized over here. You live in Columbus, right? Ohio.
I do. Yeah.
Tell us. Well, every city's got different parts. How long have you lived in Columbus? What's your impression of Columbus, Ohio?
I was born and raised here. I moved away for many years. Columbus is a good place.
Okay.
The Flag Wars I find very interesting.
Did you get to watch the whole documentary yet? You probably had to get it on Amazon now.
Yeah, I watched some of it. I didn't get to watch all of it. I got
held
up on all of it, but I did watch some of it,
mm-hmm.
and It is true. People come in and they buy stuff up like crazy.
Right. Well, here's how I look. I haven't been to Columbus, but here's how I look at cities or any place like a Columbus. And there are scores of Columbuses all over the world. It all depends on a person's point of view. Now, I'm black. Now, my interest in a Columbus would be, all right, well, used to be, would be the price of housing. All right, my frame of reference would be, because I grew up in Washington, D.C., still have a place, a house in Washington, D.C. So I'm looking at, okay, what the tax assessment on what I have in Washington, D.C. is over $400,000. Now, in Detroit, that same house will probably be assessed at not even assessed. I can probably pick up for $18,000, $19,000, $20,000. All right. So now I know in Ohio, I haven't been to Columbus yet, but I know in places like in Ohio, if I wanted to find an inexpensive house in the city, then the place for me to go would be Cleveland, Akron, Dayton, Toledo. I've been to Toledo several times. So, I know a place like Columbus, I can find a house for a house at price at levels that I couldn't find in a D.C., a Boston, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, Seattle. That would be my interest in coming to a place like that. All right, Columbus, Ohio. So I'm looking at it not through racial eyes. I'm looking at it as, man, I can buy me a cheap house in a place like that. And I've done that. Matter of fact, now I've even expanded past that. Is now, for the last 7 years, I look for land by the acre. Because what I can find for on the, what I would consider on the cheap, in a Columbus or Detroit or Indianapolis or Buffalo, New York, I can, for the same price or less, or even less expensive, I can buy land by the acre. And that's what I've been, like, I bought 10 acres of land in Presidio County, Texas for $2,000. And that includes the paperwork that, you know, goes, you know, to get it recorded and all that. Total of $2,000. So that's, for me, it's $200 an acre. Whereas no way in the world I'm going to find that in Orlando, Florida, Miami, and I'm 45 minutes away from Orlando. So the going back to flag wars, a lot of people that, it depends who watched it and what lens they watched it from. I look at it from, okay, these people saw these big houses in this section of Columbus, and some of them were many mansions, in my opinion. They found that they can pick them up on the cheap. Granted, a lot, and one of the reasons why they were able to pick them up on the cheap is because some of those houses were in disrepair. And so that's how I'm looking at it as a black person, as an outsider, as if I were into purchasing land in a city like Columbus. And there are a lot of cities like Columbus. I mean, I can do the same thing in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm sure I can do the same thing in Cincinnati, Ohio. I can do the same thing. I can still pull it off in Detroit, Flint, Michigan, anywhere in the Rust Belt. You know, go into any search engine and type in Rust Belt, and look at the area of the Rust Belt. That includes Michigan. It includes, I can do the same thing in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I can't do it in Chicago, but I can go to some place like Gary, Indiana, and do it. So there are a lot of cities in the Rust Belt, and the Rust Belt goes over to, like, Baltimore, Maryland. You can't do it as much as you can there, but you can probably eke out some. If you know where to look in Baltimore, Maryland, you can. There's a handful of places where you can probably buy on the cheap. But so that's how I looked at Flag Wars, is outsiders typically see opportunity that the indigenous population typically don't see. And they can go in there and snap up properties at a cheap price and fix them up and go from there. Anybody can do it. It's just, you know, that's the way I'm looking at it. Anyway, Kimmy, your thoughts.
Absolutely. You're correct. There are certain communities in Columbus where unfortunately, the neighborhoods have went downhill. The city wasn't doing anything about it, even though they have different programs for stuff like that. So people started coming in, and outsiders, like you said, and buying the properties up, fixing them up. And believe it or not, a lot of them are turning them into Airbnbs because of the location of being downtown.
One of the people that they were talking about, the late Linda Mitchell, because she passed away at 39 years old. I think she had some type of liver disease. But using her as a barometer, she lived in what I would consider a mini mansion that her father had bought, her parents had bought, and when he bought it, of course, he was able to buy it as compared to today's prices, on the cheap. But a topic of discussion that doesn't come up in many households, regardless of the color or race, is estate planning. In other words, okay, let's say he bought that house in 1960, when the property taxes were really low. And, you know, let's face it, in 1960, some of the expenses that, in 1960, in most city governments, there was no such thing as unionized government, local government workers. Today in many cities, particularly for a city of many size, a lot of the government workers are unionized. Unionized workers or unionized labor is expensive. So, and when you're talking about estate planning, you're looking into the future and what can you do today to prepare for the cost of inflation or cost of anything. We're talking about 30 years, 50 years into the future. That's a conversation that a lot of parents don't have with their children, nor do they prepare them for it. So, unionized government employees. And now also we have things in our home that our parents didn't have to worry, it didn't exist back then. For instance, Wi-Fi. Most homes today have an internet connection in their home. They have, you know, they didn't have cable TV. So there are things that we take for granted today that we're paying for that are really basic and fundamental that discussion didn't come up in a household 50 or 60 years ago, because 50 or 60 years ago, nobody knew about cable television on a critical mass basis. You know, maybe some nerds that was reading Popular Mechanics magazine did, but, you know, so there are things like that. So anyway, getting back to Mitchell, there was no discussion about estate planning. In estate planning, basically, you're thinking bare minimum 30 to 50 years into the future, more than likely after your demise, you know, because property taxes do go up. And then what kind of income stream do you have coming in that is going to pay for the increase of property taxes? What kind of income stream are you going to have to take care of the maintenance? You know, let's go back to 1938 as a barometer, okay? Now, the reason why I'm using 1938 as a barometer is because essentially at that period of time, a house, you can buy a house in a nice neighborhood with a white picket fence around it for $5,000. Okay, in 1938. Now, you can find a house for $5,000 today if you go to certain cities in the Rust Belt, or if you decide to build your own house. Because, like, a lot of the tiny house, one of the audios that I play on here quite often, Solar Cabin with Lamar Alexander. Lamar Alexander built him a small house. It's not a tiny house. And small houses are larger than tiny houses, okay? But he built a small house himself for $2,000. To power his house, he went to someplace like maybe a Harbor Freight, and he powered his house with solar panels so he can watch his flat-screen TV and, you know, have his 12-volt coffee maker and all this other stuff for $3,000. So Lamar Alexander for $5,000 total, that's what it cost him out of pocket. All right. Now, we're going to do some house hunting in Columbus this morning, see what those houses are priced at. But I tell you what, Kimmy, hold on. We're going to take a real quick break as we set that up, because if you watch Flag Wars, you got to watch that documentary with the right lens on it, right frame of mind, because some people looked at it with a race frame of mind, but those same people are probably never. They probably heard of the term estate planning, but they don't know what's involved. You've got to look at things not only how they look now, but, you know, are you preparing for something, particularly if you've got kids or grandkids, are you thinking 50 to 150 years in advance?
Out.
we started talking about the documentary Flag Wars, Gentrification and Estate Planning. Now, I'm looking for I'm spoiled. I look for houses that I can, if I look for a house, because I'd rather build one than find one to buy. But that's a whole nother story there. But let's say I'm in the mood to buy a house. Okay, now I look at the whole state of Ohio is one of the states that I have on my radar. And I'm looking for houses. All right, I can tell you this right now. Realtor.com, they've changed their parameters on here. With Realtor.com, they used to have it, the lowest price they had right now is $60,000. I'm spoiled. For me, I won't even look at anything for that's above $5,000. If I'm buying a house that's already built, it's got to be priced at $5,000 or below. All right, now, but Realtor.com has changed their parameters. You can use put in a dollar and find a house on Realtor.com. So much for looking for on Realtor.com. Let me see. Let me open up Kimmy's mic again. Kimmy, what are the price ranges of houses that you can find on the lower end, to your knowledge, in Columbus?
Probably right around where you said. There's probably around $60,000, because the median price in Columbus is probably around $90,000. That's medium
price. All right.
Now, can you find them lower than that? Yes, you can, but it's like finding a needle in a haystack. They're few and far between. You would probably have better luck at finding, like, either something that has been abandoned.
Right.
Or foreclosures that they're actually having a, what's the word I'm looking for, where they have a, I can't think of the word.
Yeah, they've changed the parameters on this thing.
The housing market in Columbus is booming right now, so
right.
Everything's high. Everything's extremely high.
Right. Now, what I would do in Columbus, well, what I do these days is I look in rural areas. So I would,
yeah.
Columbus is in what county?
Franklin.
Okay, let me go to Franklin. Franklin County, Ohio. All right. All right, it's sort of like in the middle of the state, or central Ohio anyway. Let's see. They've got over 1 million people that live in the county. Typically, I shy away from counties that have that many people. In Franklin County, I would look at the villages and the townships for something affordable to live in. Columbus. You're right, though. I haven't been able to find anything below $60,000 yet.
Yeah, yeah. It's very few and far between. it's very rare nowadays.
Wait, hold on. Columbus is the largest city in Ohio, right?
Yeah.
Probably followed by Cincinnati, I'm guessing.
from Cleveland,
and,
yeah.
Okay. Let me look at, let me try it another way. Columbus.
I do know this. The housing market here right now, and I know this from lots of friends and family who have been in the market to either buy a house or rent a house.
Uh-huh.
They're not staying on the market. People are scooping them up very fast.
Okay.
Very fast. So it's hard to even get into something nowadays.
Well, I'm not coming up with anything in Columbus.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I won't be house hunting in.
I believe there's personal owners, but I think there's corporations that's coming in. There's specific housing additions, especially downtown, that these personal buyers or corporations are coming in, and they're buying up the whole street if they can.
Right.
And, yeah, it's a hard thing to find.
Okay, so much for, yeah, I can't find any, it was, a, all right. Let me go,
now,
all right, hold on,
go,
wait a minute. Now, I just found something, wait a minute. Well, hold it. Is this in Columbus, though? But this is a vacant lot for $17,500. But it's not. Okay, let me switch to Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland. All right, Cleveland, Ohio. Let's see what's happening there. All right, Cleveland. Well, this is lower, $65,000, $50,000. Once again, I'm spoiled. These I wouldn't touch any because it's too high.
Right.
Now, what about, and does Columbus have any, like really rough neighborhoods these days? You know, boarded up houses, that type thing?
Yeah, they do. Real close to downtown, actually. And that seems to be a hot area right now where people are buying up, fixing them up, and increasing the value of them tremendously.
Right.
But then I don't know if they're having any luck if they're trying to resell them because the communities in that area are, you know, you go two blocks over and everything's boarded up.
Okay.
So they're working on recreating the whole area to
right.
just better the whole area in essence. But I don't know. I mean, I personally would not turn around and dump a ton of money into something that they just redid
right.
like that. Now, if they're going to put it into an estate, like you said, then they're increasing the value. That would probably
be everything I'm looking at. Everything I'm looking at in Ohio, I mean, not Ohio, but Columbus, I'm not finding no bargain basement. Now, they've got a housing bank there, though, I think. Let me see what Columbus, Ohio, that's where the city is taking back stuff. Columbus.
I just found one for $35,000. It's a 600-square-foot home. That's smaller than an apartment.
Okay.
That you would find in Columbus right now.
Now, there used to be a an abundance of those in that. We probably had to go back 20, 25 years for that, though. All right. Well, where the trend is these days, you have a lot of people that are doing these tiny homes, or they're buying RVs, they're buying campers, some of them are buying vans, quite a few are building their own places. So there seems to be a flow of people. Probably not a mass exodus. That are people that are moving to rural areas for more affordable living. Yeah, Columbus doesn't seem. Let's see, Columbus, Ohio. Land. What do you call them? Land banks. Let's see what they are. Columbus, Ohio Land Bank. Let's see what, and that's property that the city is taking back. All right, forget about 78,000. All right, here's one, but this is a lot, for 15,000. That's too much. Another city lot for $10,000. Another city lot for $10,000. Here's a city lot for $7,000. See, that's one of the reasons why I've gone rural, because I can buy stuff by the acre. The most I've ever paid was $6,000 for an acre, and that's the highest I'll ever go for an acre. But granted, now what you're paying for in the city is the comfort and conveniences of a city. Typically, there's a bus line. Where I buy, there are no bus lines. There's no subway. There's no Walmart, you know, right next door. All right, Atwood Terrace, $8,000 for the. Oh man, okay. And this is the city selling this stuff. All right. Well, if I do Ohio, it's gonna. Somebody told me that lives out that way, go two counties out, do a two-county radius outside of Columbus, and then, you know, prices really drop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my game plan for that neck of the woods. Yeah, I'm not finding anything cheap. Here's another city lot for $250,000. That's zone commercial. Another city lot for $40,000. That's too expensive. Like I said, I'm spoiled.
Yeah.
I'm not going to find anything for $2,000. I mean, $200 an acre. Okay, not in the city of Columbus. All right. Are people moving to? I guess people are moving to Columbus, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's booming, actually. They're getting ready to build a huge, and I don't remember, I shouldn't even mention it because I can't remember what it's about. The president was speaking on it just a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
But they're building something out here, and it's absolutely huge. It's in New Albany. It's something technologically advanced. I can't remember exactly, and I'm so sorry. But
all right, no problem.
It's going to bring tons and tons and tons of jobs here to the area. But, yeah, it's building up big here.
Now, I did find in the city land bank for Columbus, I found a residential vacant lot. They're asking for $975.
Okay.
Okay, and here's another one for $50. But, see, these are at There was a time, it's been so long since I was looking for houses. There were places like Buffalo, New York, or whatever, even Columbus, where you can find houses that price, but no more.
Right. I see
but that's
things
why I'm
all
saying,
the time.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But that's why I'd rather go to a rural area.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
I agree with
see,
you.
Columbus has a many. How many people live in Columbus? I mean, Columbus, that's
over a million.
Columbus. Yeah, over a million people.
Over a million. Yeah. Now, I have seen where people actually can purchase land or homes, and they're literally selling them for just the amount of the back taxes.
Okay. Let me see.
I see one listed probably about a month ago. And the taxes really weren't that high. It was like under $7,000 for the back taxes, and they would give you the title and everything for it. You would own it outright.
Let me see. Metro population of Columbus is over 2 million people. That's Metro Columbus. Well, that explains why you can't find a cheap house there. I mean, a really cheap house there anymore.
Yeah,
that explains
and why
that.
Scoop everything up, you can't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of my family members, probably about 6 months ago, was looking for a house to rent, and they
mm-hmm.
literally put an application in at least to 30 different houses in the surrounding area, and every time they would put an application in, the house was gone.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if this played into it or not, but I think it may have something to do with it, where when COVID came 2 years ago, and then, you know, people's incomes were coming to a halt because people couldn't get to work or whatever the case may have been, they put the hold on evicting people from places,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Well, then all that adds up in the end, and it still needs to be paid.
Right.
And I heard of a lot of people not being able to afford to catch that stuff up. So when the government lifted the ability for them not to be evicted, and then, you know, all that, the fees and all the amounts of
right.
all the back road rent, these people ended up on the streets. So I think it created a storm of people looking for housing, and that may have played something into the effect of why you can't find nothing around here.
Right.
It just gets scooped up so fast. That may not be what it is, but I think that had something to do with it, maybe.
Okay. Well, let's add into the conversation of estate planning, because estate planning requires somebody to have good enough help so they can administer their health, I mean their estate. Your suggestions on what kind of diet should people have so they can stay healthy?
Absolutely. Well, you want to stay away from, well, not that you want to stay away, but you at least want to cut back on them saturated fats and
mm-hmm.
watch your sugar intake, your salt intake, stuff like that, because that can all be very problematic with everything.
Now, in Columbus, I take for granted there are probably little neighborhood groups that have community gardens.
There's community gardens. There's community flea markets everywhere with fresh fruits year-round.
Okay.
Year-round. In just about every community, you can find a fresh farmer's market. There's actually different businesses on the outskirts of Columbus that are huge farmer's markets.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you have, as we were discussing yesterday, you literally have the private farmers who sell things, you know, from their farms, or a lot of them will take the items to farm markets and stuff. Or I've noticed that they're actually setting up websites where you can order through them through the website and then either pick it up or have it delivered to your home.
Okay.
Which is nice. I mean, I would rather support a local farmer than a big chain grocery store when it comes to something like that.
Okay. Now, in Columbus, I take for granted, you have a bus line there, a city bus line?
Yes.
What about Subway?
No, there's no Subway. Just a bus line.
All right. No streetcar, nothing like that?
No. No, I think that they actually tested the, there was a couple of self-driving cars downtown for a while, but I think they stopped that. But no, no bus cars or subways.
Right, so you got a city bus line, so that's an inexpensive way that many people travel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess you got Uber and Lyft there. Well, least expensive would be the bus line.
Yeah, because Uber and Lyft can get pretty expensive around here.
Hmm. Okay,
like
now I'm looking.
I used it one time to go to the airport, and I'm less than 10 miles from the airport, and it cost me almost $40.
Okay, that can get pricey. I'm looking at the 10 most expensive cities in the state of Ohio for 2021. I'll read them from 1 down to 10. Oxford, Ohio. Beachwood, Ohio is number 2. Athens, Ohio is the 3rd most expensive city in the state of Ohio. Bowling Green, 4. Kent, Ohio, 5. Willoughby Hills, Ohio, number 6. Number 7, Aurora, Ohio. Number 8, Cincinnati, Ohio. 9, Columbus, Ohio. And Oberlin, Ohio, that's the 10th most. Those are the 10 most expensive cities in Ohio. Now, let me put in the least expensive because that's the way I shop. And I do it by counties anyway. All right, but as far as cities go, do they have any? The 10 cheapest places to live in Ohio. Okay. Let's see how they have. All right. Martins Ferry, Ohio is, or let me go from the bottom up. Trenton, Ohio, Fosteria, Ohio, Hubbard, Ohio, Clyde, Ohio, Clayton, Ohio, Bellevue, Ohio, Martins Ferry, Ohio. What's that about? You ever heard of that place?
A lot of the ones that you are mentioning are small farm towns.
See, that's more my speed. Martins Ferry, Ohio. It's a city in Ohio. Population 6,664. Now, that's more my speed. And what county is this? This is in Belmont County, Ohio. Belmont County has a population of 66. That's where I go shopping. I look for small counties, and then once I get to those, because countywide it's got 66,497 people. And then when I look at the communities of Belmont, they have two cities in Belmont. That's Martin Ferry and St. Clairsville. Now, they got a bunch of villages and unincorporated communities. Let me go, let's say, Boston, Ohio. They don't even have a population here.
I believe West Jefferson is a village and unincorporated.
Okay, hold it. West Jefferson. That's in the same county?
It's Franklin, or it's Madison County.
Okay, where did you say that? Give me the name of that town again.
West Jefferson.
All right, West Jefferson. Okay, I found that. Population 4,364.
Yeah.
That's where I would go shopping.
Yeah.
And I would go shopping for a patch of land, and I'll build what I need built on it.
Yeah. And believe it or not, on the outskirts of West Jefferson, there is a lot of Amish.
My kind of people.
And Mennonites.
My kind of people.
Yeah.
Because they're entrepreneurial, and they don't get into the grid, so to speak. I mean, now places like Columbus, the way I look at a place like Columbus, and I haven't been to Columbus yet, but I'm looking at great places to visit, great places to hang out. You know, you might even work there. Because you do have a lot of people there that consumers that can buy whatever you're selling. But as far as living there with the roof, no. I'll drive 3 hours if I have to. You know,
right.
So I'll live in one of these other places that you just recommended. West Jefferson, Ohio. I'll live in West Jefferson, commute to and nowadays with the technology, you know, you wouldn't really have to, I mean, depending on the job now. You know, depending on the job, you wouldn't have to be there every day. Some jobs, like if you got a job like at, let's say, a fast food place, someplace where you have to physically be to perform that job, then, you know, you just have to. Well, what I was told about Columbus is the prices really drop if you get you just give yourself a 2-county radius of the city, and then, you know, the prices really drop. So, but a lot of people do not want to travel.
Right.
They want the comfort and conveniences of, but Columbus, the documentary Flag Wars, when that documentary was done, I imagine those houses were dramatically cheaper than what those houses, you probably can't even snap them up for those prices anymore.
Right.
Anyway, but getting back to the health aspect of it. So, how would you go shopping? I mean, I take for granted they have a Whole Foods in Columbus, I take it, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So, would you suggest a person shop at a Whole Foods, which the food is supposedly healthier, or find a local farmer's market?
Believe it or not, the farmer's market, it's going to be a lot more, it's going to be cheaper in essence. And a lot of times you're going to get better products, and I'm just a loss for words this morning. You're literally helping, you know, someone's family if it's a local
right.
farmer. Whereas Whole Food, it's a huge chain, and you're paying outrageous prices. I mean, yes, you can get great products from there, but you're really paying for it. Now, a lot of what Ohioans do, a good majority of people that I know, they actually hook up with farmers. And they not only buy their fruits and vegetables, but they buy their meat. They can buy a half a cow, a quarter of a cow, however they like, and it gets sent to the butcher and processed however they like, and then they fill their freezers. Ohioans are known for doing stuff like that, especially for getting ready for the winter. They'll,
mm-hmm.
you know, family members.
So they'll get together with some neighbors and some friends.
Right,
and,
right.
Like you say, buy a cow or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a smart way to do it.
Yeah, it's more cost efficient. You're getting to choose the cut of meat or how you want it to be processed, and it's much better because you're getting less fillers than what you do in the big chain stores.
True. All right, well, that makes sense. So I take for granted the what we talked about yesterday. Farm to door. So farm to door is not a strange concept there, then. At least
no.
if you're in the right circle of people.
Yeah, especially here in Ohio, because that's how I was raised. My father
mm-hmm.
always, he'd go purchase the whole cow and fill up the freezers in the house, have it processed however he wanted, and fill up the freezer. And, you know, you're paying more up front for it, but in the long run, it's more cost efficient that way. And you're getting better
right.
products. And you are supporting local farmers. So
right.
it's a win-win all the way around. It really is.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if they have that so much in Florida.
Well, you've got a bunch of farmers. Actually, you know, once you get outside of Miami, Fort Lauderdale, that strip, Orlando, Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, that little pocket, Tallahassee, which is the capital, and Jacksonville, which is the largest populated city in Florida. Basically, Florida's farm, rural.
Yeah.
Now I'm about 45 minutes away from Orlando, and 30 minutes away from Tampa. I mean, where I live is kind of like right across, 30 seconds from where I'm sitting at, by walking, it's a citrus orchard. I mean, a big one, probably one of the ones that tap into Tropicana, because Tropicana and Sunkist. Those are basically marketing companies. They get their product from, like, one of my neighbor that's sitting right across the street from me with the cows and the horses. I see cows and horses every day. I'm 30
mm-hmm.
seconds from it right now, by foot, if that. If I look out the window or look out the front door, you know, in the morning, you'll see the cows, and occasionally you'll see the horses. But it's a citrus orchard, and so Florida's got a bunch of citrus, a lot of mom-and-pop people that own 5 acres of land, 10 acres of land, or whatever, and they sell to, you know, the processing plants, and Tropicana is just a brand name for marketing for these small mom-and-pop farmers. So now on my side of the street, it looks more like a subdivision. But then again, you know, I got 14, 15 citrus trees in my backyard. But But, yeah, but Florida, for the most part, once you get outside those big brand-name cities, which, I mean, with 67 counties. So, all right, let's see. Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Orlando, Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, that's five. Tallahassee, that's six. Jacksonville, that's seven. So we're talking about seven primary cities. And Florida's got, like, over 400 towns, 67 counties. It's basically rural. You probably see more cows here than in a lot of places. But it's the number one place if it's not still number one, it's definitely still in the top three places for people living in mobile homes.
Mm-hmm.
So I know
that years ago Florida was in the top five in the United States for beef, for cattle.
There's a lot of cows down here.
I don't know if they're still there, if they're in the top five, but I bet they're still in the top ten in the nation.
It's a lot of rural, totally different from what some people think. But
yeah, because you would think that it would be all citrus.
No, you got a lot of cows, you got a lot of farms down here. So once you step outside it's just pretty rural. 425, your mic is open.
Well, hello, and that's why I always say we need to have either our own individual gardens or community gardens. We can pull together and we can raise our own cows and animals and stuff like that and share them in the community. Yep.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I agree with you 100%.
Let's see. Well, you're on top. Now, the Amish, you know, we got a little Amish community, not here, but in Southwest Florida. But I guess you pick up more Amish and Mennonite people in Ohio. I know they're in Western New York.
Mm-hmm. They're in Pennsylvania as well. Large population.
Pennsylvania, they're heavy in Pennsylvania, Indiana, not Indianapolis.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot in Wisconsin as well. Yep.
Yeah. Those are the places. Actually, you know what? I would say if you were looking for an inexpensive place to set up a home, look for an Amish community. Now, you get as close as you can to an Amish community because typically they buy land at affordable prices. That's what I would. But you know what? But once again, most people, 75 to 80% of the population live in the in a metro area or urban area because they are addicted to the comfort and conveniences of city life. They don't want to, I mean, think about it. Most people that live in, well, it could be Columbus or it could be Seattle, Washington, or any place. Their life basically is within an hour radius of where they lay their head at night. So their job is within, it doesn't take them that long to get to their job, no more than an hour to get to their job, their commute time. Their place of worship is typically within that 60-minute, and I'm going to say 60-mile radius. What's
recreation.
That, there, Robin?
Recreation.
Yeah, recreation.
Education,
probably even wherever they met their spouse.
And employment, yeah. And everything,
and employment,
like you said.
And even, now this might sound crazy, but this is a little social observation I've noticed over the years, that a lot of people that might have extracurricular partners, I'll put it that way, outside of their marriage, typically it's within, it's less than an hour from where they sleep.
I hope. You know, you're a hope.
At night.
We talk about some of them are their neighbors.
Yeah, there you go. Seriously, right. some are neighbors. I knew of a friend of mine, her sister. Her husband was in the military at the time.
Uh-huh.
And during one of those Iraq wars, or one of those wars. And he was doing combat. He signed up for combat because with combat, you know, you get more money. You might not come home, but you get more money while you're alive. So I don't know if he ever found out, but now I was friends with his sister. So she was having an affair with the next door neighbor.
Yeah.
So I'm saying all that to say is city life is a lot of people are addicted to the comfort and conveniences. They don't want to go a long way to the job. You know, now I'm sure Columbus is like this too. You have some
actually,
people, they want to live downtown. They want to live downtown so they can walk to the job, so they can walk or bike to the, you know, all the shopping that they need to do, or if there's a shopping center nearby, it's all within 60 minutes or less.
Yeah, so watch this. That's not really a matter of choice of the people for convenience. It's by design. So the cities and municipalities and all that will try to put most of the population in a concentrated area. And then they'll have large land masses that are relatively close, but they're considered rural. And then they won't have gas stations, convenience stores, and department stores in those areas by design, because they won't drive the people to one central location so that they can mass manipulate and mass control them. It's more than a matter of convenience. And then the people, they get hooked to that convenience. And then when they go outside of those areas and they don't have stuff, the convenience there by design, why can't they have a Walmart in the middle of rural? Because rural people shop and rural areas are populated with people, with consumers, cable, food, groceries, all of that. So I just wanted to point that out. And it's important to understand that distinction so that we don't go, oh, well, you know, we're convenient. Nope. It's not even that. We're following. They lined us up, and we're just following along. Yep.
Well, the whole concept of downtown was a central place where, you know, you can get a lot of things conveniently. But however, the downtowns now, I mean, you're going to pay if you want that white picket fence. Well, it depends on the city, but like I say, a lot of people are addicted to that comfort and conveniences of. I mean, I don't know about Columbus, but like in Washington, D.C., probably Philadelphia, definitely New York City, you don't need a car to live in those places because there's plenty of public transportation. You can catch the bus in D.C. You can catch the subway in D.C. You can go to the suburbs all by bus or subway. Now, it adds up over time in a short amount of time like that. But there's a lot of people, they you know, once anything over 1 hour, for everything we just talked about, the basics. We're talking about for entertainment, recreation, worship, shopping, and even extracurricular activities. You know, if it's anything over an hour, a lot of people, I mean, look, let's take the homeless population. You see a lot more homeless people in the bigger cities. Why? Because the primary basic services that they need are in those cities. Versus if you, the further out you go, you know, you have to be more independent. But Robin, Robin, you lived in that world. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I had to go into those areas because that's where the services were at. And then watch this. There wasn't even transportation out to the rural.
Mm-hmm.
What I would have preferred to done was get a pop tent and go out in the tent somewhere. Go out in the woods somewhere because that's safer, right? I wouldn't be refused no beds, no nothing. But there's no transportation to the woods.
You're typically to the if you're going into a rural area there, you need another skill set to be out that way though too.
Well, you actually have that skill set. It's just not honed. Everyone has the skill to survive, okay? And then they take in 4-H. The 4-H club doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. They don't teach shop and certain things in school anymore, how to tie knots, how to build a fire. Even shop and upholstery and woodworking. In the high school, they've taken all that out. Why? Because they want you dependent upon going to the government to get that EBT card. It's ridiculous. And then people will get that EBT card and go to great lengths to keep their benefits when they could be take that same energy and start a business. Now you're working
now
on generational wealth.
Let's talk about food for a moment. Now, with the EBT card, you can buy food. But where can you buy it from? Can you use your EBT card and go to the farmer's market?
No.
In Washington State, a lot of the farmers' markets are accepting EBT cards now.
Okay, but Ohio is a different story, right, Kim?
But I think that's on a state level,
mm-hmm.
you
right.
know. Yeah, because she's right there. You can't use it at a farmer's market. You also can't use it to buy hot food. And it's like, well, duh, when are you going to give me food stamps for? And I don't have a place to prepare food, right? So
okay.
You know how you can go in and they've got the hot food on that hot food section, and you can buy
right.
a whole meal, right? But
buy
no.
rotisserie chicken.
So, but not hot. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, if it's hot,
well, I'm talking about a hot one ready to eat.
So what I learned is, go to the shelf, packaged one. They have a package cold on the shelf. Take that and go, hey, pay for it, and then go, hey, can I use your microwave? It's stupid. It's completely stupid.
Yeah, in Ohio.
You can't nuke a rotisserie chicken, though. Oh, all right. What are some of the things, with a farmer's market, you can go to a farmer's market and buy, you know, tomatoes, lettuce, raw honey. If it's an Amish or Mennonite farmer's market, there's baked goods.
Their own cheeses, dairy, butter, bread.
Yeah.
They make
right.
it all. Amish are completely self-sufficient. Like, the world needs to take note
on the Amish community because they are completely self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Now, Kimmy, that strategy that you talked about earlier, where some family or friends get together and buy a cow or half a cow or whatever, that strategy can't be used with EBT cards, can it? Or can I? I don't think it could. I don't know.
Not that I'm aware of. There may be some that are maybe bigger farmers that could possibly be set up with something like that. I'm just not aware of it. And maybe the butchers say that they
butchers are on the EBT network now because they're considered groceries. All right?
Yeah.
So you still can get together and go to the butcher and buy a whole cow or whatever and then have them pack it up in the individual blah, 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 blue for you. Yep.
Now, my question is, how many people on EBT think that way, though?
So you raise awareness and you put out those public service announcements.
Okay.
That's how you do that.
That's how you do it. Yep. Like I say, how many actually think that way now?
Well, they're not thinking, and they don't want the people to think. They want them to just line up and get that card and don't ask no questions. Don't say nothing. They want sheep.
I'm not going to dispute that.
You know, now that we're talking about this, I just Googled it. Believe it or not, this is blowing my mind. There are fast food places that take EBT or SNAP recipients now. It says Subway, Jack in the Box, Carl's Jr., Papa John's Pizza, Domino's, Taco Bell, Golden Corral. Yeah, there's a list of places.
Yep.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Like, some of those places don't sell real food for starters.
Right.
But then, now, I guess how much goes on those cards? I guess that depends. That's different from household to household.
Right. And probably.
It's different from household. Robin, if you got a household of two people, okay, a mother and a child or a father and a kid, just a guess, man,
so
how much you think might go on that card?
I can tell you this. My daughter's a family of four. They get $600.
All right. So, that's $600 to eat, right?
Yeah.
Robin, you there? Yeah, Robin, all right.
Yeah.
That's $600 that's to be used for groceries?
Groceries, EBT.
Okay. Now, does that include an occasional snack, I mean, from Subway or going to Golden, or taking the family to Golden Corral?
It's $600 for groceries wherever you spend it.
Well, now, a meal at Golden Corral wouldn't be considered groceries, would it?
You can't use EBT at Golden Corral.
Okay. All right, so they can take the EBT card wherever it's sold. But the last place I would take it would be Whole Foods. Because $600 can be absorbed real. I remember one year, or 1 week, rather. I said, you know what? I'm going to eat a hot meal at the hot bar at Whole Foods every day of the week. I started on Monday, and by Thursday, that was it. I had spent $70. I probably could have quit on Wednesday. I said, no.
And that's
just me.
Yeah, that's That's absolutely ridiculous when you could have gone and bought a loaf of bread and some lunch meat and some whatever for way less than that and ate for 2 weeks.
That's true. However, my mindset at the time when I tried that little experiment was, you know, hell, first thing. Now, how many other people thought was thinking like, Whole Foods is a cool place to go shopping. You know, the ambiance, you know, the aesthetics, and they do have good food.
Yeah.
And, but I quit. It, 3 or 4 days, I'm done with it. But some people, you know, they are so attached to the comfort and conveniences that some cities
and
present. They like the Whole Foods. They like to go to this place, and they'll set up a tent under a bridge so they can be close to all that stuff.
Because of the social component, some of these people, they don't have a family or a spouse or a boyfriend, so they will pay that extra cost, because that's what it is. It's not just convenience, it's companionship too, or social capital.
Oh, well, I never thought about that aspect of it.
People have a need to be connected to each other. And when there's that disconnect and they can't find their way back in from within themselves, that's why they commit suicide.
Oh, that's a whole nother podcast.
Like
all right,
but,
hold on. You had it in the social component. So a lot of reason why a lot of people, all right, with this social element. You know what, that's a whole nother podcast because
yeah.
We got, there are people that are in these shelters.
Exactly. Homeless people, that's a good example. The homeless people, and I say we because I was homeless for 15 years, and I they're still my brothers and sisters. Just because I'm okay, I'm not really okay until there's not a single homeless person left on this planet, as far as I'm concerned. But they'll go okay, and they'll find a location where everybody goes, like a community center, blah blah blah, versus going to a park or a location where there's nobody at because of that social function, that social compartment. It's needed.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Let me switch before we close out. Let's go to a trending topic at the end of the week of Friday. Any thoughts or comments on Jussie Smollett? I call him Jussie Smollett. Add the French element to it. He got sentenced to a 150-day jail sentence in the Cook County Jail. Then he's got, 3 to 5 years of probation after that. I think he got a real light sentence myself. Any thoughts on him? I'll start with you, Rob.
I think.
Oh, and he held it. He was defiant at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the whole thing is ridiculous. So I have always said this, that this whole thing was a script that the Empire, what's his name? What's that? Daniel?
Lee Daniels.
He wrote this whole script because the Empire was fading out. Power was rising up. All on Netflix, all these other things were taking off, and they were losing interest in Empire. So they wanted to do something to bring sympathy and keep all eyes and attention on Empire. So he wrote the script, and he got Jussie Smollett, who was stupid enough to do it, right? Everybody, right? So this whole thing, even him being defiant in court, okay? And with that, I say he should have got more jail time. That probation, people need to understand, I don't care who you are. If you're a superstar or a regular person, if you was a regular person and black, they'd be trying to throw you under the jail. But this is what I say. The law is for the lawless. So when you commit a crime, if I commit a crime, I get arrested, I do my time. That's the American way. Okay? So with that, I think the boy should go and do some time, and even a lot of time. And then they can think about playing with people's thoughts and stuff by writing a script and putting it out there. You can't do illegal stuff, people. I don't care who you are. That's all.
And I got another trending topic. I read the headline. 5-year-old boy who attacked teacher lacked the intent necessary for prosecution. Here it goes. It says a 5-year-old Florida boy who police say severely beat his teacher will not be charged over the incident, lacked the criminal intent that would be needed for prosecution, legal experts say. The attack left special education instructor at Pines Lakes Elementary School sitting on the ground against the wall when the first responders reached her, as she appeared to be in a faint state, according to the Pembroke Pines Police. The teacher was hospitalized with a concussion and won't return to the classroom anytime soon. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I left the school system over 25 years ago. Anyway,
yeah.
Kimmy, any comments on that or the Jesse Smollett?
Well, as for the little boy or the child that you're talking about that beat the teacher, the world is definitely not like it used to be.
Nope.
Because I was raised, boy, I would have toted an ass whipping for that one. Show your elders respect, and don't you
right.
dare even look at them wrong, talk back to them, even think about laying your hands on them. It did not happen. So
you know, you're right.
Yeah,
there was no thought of laying your hands on a teacher.
Right.
No, not even a
right.
thought.
Right. And because
we'll see. I got, they used to, back when I was coming up, I'm a baby boomer, teachers were then, they're not allowed to do it now, but there was a thing called the Board of Education.
Right.
And teachers
right.
or the principal or somebody were allowed,
right.
if you got out of line, they were allowed to, you know, but you can't do that anymore, though.
They were allowed to swat you, yep.
Yeah, but now you're right. I mean, but back then there wasn't even a thought of striking a teacher. Not even a
right.
thought. Wasn't in any conversation, nothing.
Right. And that is the difference between that generation and the generation that's coming up now, because all respect has went out the damn window. That's just my personal opinion.
And it's too politicized.
I'm not saying that that's the greatest ways, but I see a big difference between then and now with many things, and it's saddening.
You're right. All right, well, Kimmy, thank you for being here this week.
Thank you for having me.
You got some
it's
help
always
tips.
A joy.
And whatnot. Matter of fact, I've only had one Amish person. She was formerly Amish when she was on the show. I had to look up the show when she was on. I forgot the lady's name. But what I like about the Amish and the Mennonite communities, a lot of them have family-based businesses. They're very entrepreneurial, and they basically, to a very high degree, live debt-free, at least debt-free in the sense of getting 30-year mortgages and that type of thing. And
right.
I imagine when it comes to health and wellness, they've got some interesting things. One topic I would like to cover is there was a movie, or maybe you guys, it was a movement of some New World people. We're going back in time now, here in this in the North American continent. That it was some kind of expedition, and they were headed out west, but they didn't know how to live off the fat of the land, and they died off. A lot of them died off. What was the name of that? Any event, I had a guy on here out of Canada. I got to call him back. It's how we can recognize, in other words, nature provides us with a virtual grocery store. Okay. If we know how to go out in the woods, everything we need to survive, as far as food, medicine, shelter, it's all with, but if you don't recognize it, which that's what's happening in our modern time. I think what was that Western, if somebody can help me out, they went out west, it wasn't Lewis and Clark. Expedition. It's not coming. Wait, hold it. Wait a minute. What? No, it wasn't Lewis and Clark. Can anybody else think of an expedition other than there's Lewis and Clark? The people went out west, but they didn't know how to... they didn't know how to feed themselves off the available land that was there, and they died. Many of them died. You know what? I had to look it up over the weekend. Okay. All right. On that note, everyone have huh?
I was going to say, you know, another idea that would be great to probably talk about, to go a little further with Amish on how they actually come together as a community to, like, pay for health care when it's needed for each other, because they like that. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can you share some of that with me? If you know anything about that right now, just a little bit?
I can. So their community comes together as a whole, each individual community, they come to as a whole, and I was amazed by this because I did some research on it and watched some specials on it, but they literally, like, they're known for making beautiful furniture, wood
right.
furniture and stuff like that. So every so often, everyone in the community brings together, they make different things, and they bring them to auction, and they sell the stuff at auction. That money is put into an account. So anyone that is in their community that comes up with something health-related that they need help with or they need to get some kind of care, their bills and everything are paid through those community accounts. They
now
come together.
That's what I call that's real Social Security.
Right. I mean, when they build their homes, all of the neighbors, all of the families, everything, they all come together and they build it together. That's what I'm saying. Everyone needs to stop and pay attention to what the Amish are doing because they are completely self-sufficient. They completely just empower each other and provide whatever's needed when a neighbor needs something. They are an amazing community. They really are.
Now, you have some Native American tribes that operate similarly also. That, particularly if a tribe owns a community-based business, it could be, doesn't have to be a casino, or resort area that has golf and all that. But I imagine you have some Native American tribes that they too make furniture, they make things they can sell. And
right.
That basically finances a lot of I had one person on here who was a member of a Native American tribe up in Minnesota. And she's a member of the tribe but doesn't work for the tribe, but she gets a healthy enough check every month that she was able to buy a nice townhouse. And, you know, sustain that. So we'll get into all that. In any event, Kimmy, thanks again. Have a great weekend, you and everybody else.
You too. Thank you.